from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Christian Fowler, a senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We have a podcast called The Unbluff Podcast, releases every single Tuesday at noon. You can find it on Spotify. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, full-length video version, on YouTube, Bluff City Media's YouTube. But he is on XNC Fowler BCM, and he joins right now. Christian, what's happening? How are you, brother?
I'm wonderful, Gabe. How are you? I'm glad I get to talk to you. I didn't get to do the podcast with you guys last night.
So, yeah, no, we managed without you, man. We managed.
You did?
Yeah, we figured it out.
It's just not the same, though, right?
Yeah, it was kind of funny. Last night, we expected to go a little shorter, and we ended up having a 50-minute first segment. So, you wind me and Kenny up, I don't know what it is, man. We just go.
Both of you love to talk and have the last word, and that's why it works with me there.
Yeah, now, speaking of the last word, who's going to have the last word with CeeDee Lamb and the Cowboys? What's going to happen here? I did see also today that I'm asking you this question because we talked about it on the podcast last night. But I'm asking you this question on the day that Sportico put out their team valuations for the NFL, and the Cowboys are the first NFL franchise, first sports franchise to get past $10 billion worth of evaluation. Yep. $10.32 billion, and they can't pay a top three wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, I think there was a report that came out today. I think it was from Schefter, Ian Rapoport, or one of them, that said that, you know, they believed the deal would get done before the end of the preseason, and it's like, that's fine. You know, that's fine. That's good news, I guess, that they're planning on or expecting a deal to be done.
Sure.
At some point. But I just keep coming back to, why is it not done? Why has it not been done? Why do the Cowboys have one of the best receivers in the league that's not even been at training camp? Because at the top of the organization, they can't get a deal done with him. And it's like, what are we, you know, are we messed up over a couple, you know, is it $2 or $3 million that we're messed up over? Because if that's the case, why has it not been done for months now? I mean, this should have been taken care of. This offense is so dependent on him. The passing offense is so dependent on him. You look at the Cowboys wide receivers without CeeDee Lamb, and it's arguably the worst group of receivers in the entire league. I mean, you would be rolling out there in three receiver sets with a very aged Brandon Cooks, who is past his prime, Jalen Tolbert in his third year, who's had little to no production as a third-round pick out of South Alabama. And then the third receiver, who knows, Jalen Brooks, Jalen Cropper, you know, one of these young first or second-year players, Ryan Floroni, who's a sixth-round rookie. And it's really bad. And this offense would be really, really bad without CeeDee Lamb there. And you would think that the Cowboys would know and understand that and have this done in preparation for training camp in the season, but they don't. And I guess at this point, we're just waiting until it does get done, but hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and here's the thing that I just can't get over. Why can't Jerry Jones help himself? Why does he have to just say the dumbest things possible and in the midst of, you know, the CD Lamb contract negotiations. He says there's no urgency to get it done. Then he basically comes back and he says, "You're missed, okay? Damn it. Of course we miss you, but we don't miss you right now out here competing because you're not here." It's like, Jerry, at some point, you have to realize that there's other faces of the franchise. You have to let somebody else take that away from you. Dak, CD, and Micah are those guys. It feels like Jerry still wants to be the center of attention at all times.
100%, because you even heard him say throughout talking about these contract negotiations that at certain points he said, you know, Dak's deal is going to get done. He's the top priority. And then you've heard him say at other points, the CD deal is going to get done. It's the top priority. And then the same thing about Micah Parsons as well. And it's like, okay, we can't put all these guys as the top. We can't say every single one of these guys is the top priority and then come back.
So you have
and
no urgency.
List them in order on, okay, this is the priority. You know, it's Dak first and then CD and then Micah Parsons because he still has another year on his deal. It just is a lot of blah, 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 if you ask me. I mean, it's ridiculous that your team, your franchise would be absolutely horrendous without those three players. And defensively, if you didn't have Micah Parsons, you might still be okay. But offensively, if you didn't have one of Dak or CD, you'd be terrible. And if you didn't have both, you'd probably be the worst offense. Now, I don't think probably. I think 100% you'd be the worst offense in the entire league. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, like you said, he just wants to be the center of attention. He wants to make it about him. What can he say in a press conference to grab a headline? How can he grab attention? I think on the CD deal as well, he's come out at points and said, you know, we're really close to being done. And there's been times where he said, you know, that the negotiations have stalled and they're not that close anymore. Then I think the most recent one was he came out and said they were closing in, but he didn't feel like putting a percentage on how close they were and making any kind of calculation or guess on how close a deal was to being done was insane. And it's just, it's so much back and forth. Yep. And it's so much just filler to grab headlines. It's pretty ridiculous.
No, I listen, I don't want to blame a fan base by any stretch of the imagination, but the Cowboys fan base is always rabid and they show up to every game, although they haven't been showing up to camp like they usually do because I think they're a little frustrated with the situation. But, I mean, how much complacency is there for the Joneses, right? Like, they just know that massive stadium that they built not too long ago is still going to be filled by week one. Like, it feels like there's just a complacency with the logo, with the star, with the amount of fans they know will show up and be rabid about that team. Just feels like they're complacent. Am I wrong in that type of sentiment?
No, I don't think so. I think they're complacent, and I think they're also very ego-driven. Because, I mean, maybe it's just me, but when I watch Jerry or Stephen Jones in a press conference, like, it's hard to like those people. It's hard to be like, okay, I feel like they have the best intentions and they're running the ship the right way. And I think it doesn't take much of a rocket scientist to look at the Cowboys over the last, you know, whatever it is, 26 years or however long it's been since they've won a Super Bowl and say, there's a reason at the top that all this has happened, because they've had good enough teams where they were maybe a player or two away, both in the Tony Romo era and the Dak Prescott era, where things could have been done. The front office could have been more aggressive in pursuing certain things. Like I said, maybe they were a piece or two away at this specific position, and there was no effort at all to try to get that position. It was just kind of the egotistical aspect of, we got it, we'll figure it out. And we've seen that. I can't even tell you how many times in my lifetime I remember that happening, whether this year is a perfect example at running back of just being so ego-driven by, we'll be fine, we'll figure it out. Like, it's okay, it's really not that big of a deal. And there was a point in time when it was the same thing about receiver, where, you know, it's not that big of a deal, we're going to be fine at receiver. Like, there's so many position groups that I could walk through and say that that's been the case in my lifetime, and it all feels like we're just better than everybody else. So it doesn't matter if we have a on-paper deficiency at this specific position. And I've been tired of it for a while. I've been tired of it for a long time. And it's like it continues to spiral and get worse. And I really am afraid that eventually we're going to get to the point where it's terrible on all aspects, you know, not only in the front office, but on the field as well. Like, it feels like that's the collision course we're headed for if something doesn't change.
Yep. Now, how much preseason football did you get to catch last weekend?
I caught a little
fair
bit.
Amount.
Not too terribly much.
I was
in Nashville over the weekend for a bachelor trip, so I caught a little bit of the Titans and who did they play? Why am I
49ers.
On that? 49ers. Titans and 49ers. Caught a little bit of that game. Caught a little bit of the Patriots game earlier in the week. So I watched a little bit in Nashville, but
yeah,
not too much.
Sort of looking back at it, who jumped off the page for you? Who was, you know, out of the rookies? Like it was Caleb Williams at the top of your list. Like what players really jumped off the page for you that you were impressed with?
Yeah, Caleb Williams is definitely at the top of that list. That's another game I got to see a little bit of, was the Bears and Bills game, and he got a couple series and he looked really, really good. And I've seen some analysts talking about, you know, how he looks so much different than Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields did when they first played in the preseason. And, you know, even though there was a lot of hype around those guys and thinking that they could be the face of the franchise and turn it around, that looking back now, even though it was a very, very small sample size from Caleb Williams, it just looks so much different.
Yep. The one thing
you're
going to have to pay attention to, and we brought this up, I think, last week when we were talking about it, when we knew Caleb Williams was going to play, 3.56 seconds from snap to throw. That's massive. That would have led the league last year. Justin Fields led the league in snap to throw, which is not a good thing, by the way, with 3.23 seconds. That's something Caleb Williams is going to have to work on, but at least it looks different. It's palpable, the difference in you know, sort of understanding of the offense and, you know, the difference in weaponry around him, the plays he can make. It's different, but he does have to work on that. That's something that he is he's going to struggle with in the NFL if he continues to hold on to the ball too long.
Yeah, I think he'll take a lot of sacks this year. I think that's going to be part of the learning curve with him. But I think also on the flip side of that, he's going to make a lot of big plays that most quarterbacks wouldn't be able to make because of his ability to extend plays and hold the ball in his hands a little bit longer. So it's a little bit of positive and negative. I think that's just something I have to work on throughout his career. But speaking on that, like, you know, the snap to throw time that Justin Fields has, a lot of times it just looked like chaos. It looked like he was panicking and would take off running eventually if he wasn't sacked. And with Caleb Williams, it looks more controlled. It looks more like he has control of holding on to the ball that long, and there's more of a plan going on in his head at that time than it was with Justin Fields. But I was extremely impressed, and that was without Keenan Allen, who's projected to be the number two in that offense on the field. And I think the ceiling for that team and for that offense, it really is higher than it's been, at least in my lifetime, for the Chicago Bears offensively. I mean, we've never really seen them have an elite offense. They've never had a 4,000-yard passer, which is
nuts.
One of the crazier stats in football, that one of the longest-standing franchises has never had a 4,000-yard passer, and that will change within the next couple of years. I think we all feel pretty confident that that will be the case, but he looked really good. He looked sharp. And like I said, that was with DJ Moore and Roma Dunze without Keenan Allen, who we know is one of the more quarterback-friendly wide receivers in the league. So number one pick, Caleb Williams, was awesome. Number two pick, Jaden Daniels, looked really, really good as well. Checking out of a play on third and long, goes deep, 42 yards on a beautiful completion, caps the drive off with a rushing touchdown. And you can see the reason that there has been a lot of hype surrounding him in training camp. You listen to their coaching staff and the veterans talk about him, how he's ready, like he's prepared, and the game doesn't look too big for him. And I think we saw that even though it was preseason, even though it was, you know, a drive. I know we can't get carried away, but certain players just pass the eye test, even if it's a very small sample size. And I think both of them did. The number one pick and the number two pick both looked really good. And To me, and I know to you as well, it's exciting to see new quarterbacks come in
100%.
And say, okay, this guy can be a face of a franchise and continue to elevate quarterback play in the NFL. So I think both of them look very good in their debut, and it'll be interesting to see how much they play in the upcoming two games, you know, if it stays a series or if they give them a couple more with getting closer to the regular season, but it'll be really fun to watch both of them fully unleashed, not only with their arm talent, but both of them are guys that are mobile and can move around, obviously in much different ways. But two guys that can move, it'll be fun to watch them when they are fully unleashed in the regular season in a few weeks.
Now, sometimes we have hot takes, right? But I think there are also hot take or cold takes that are viewed as hot takes. And when I look at Caleb Williams and what he may do this year, this is probably going to be the best number one overall quarterback rookie season in the history of the game. Like, it just feels like that is sort of written. And the reason I say that, like, Andrew Luck was great. He went 11 and 5 his rookie year. But when you look at what he did, yeah, he threw for 4,300 yards, but he had 18 interceptions to 23 touchdowns. Kyler Murray was solid his rookie year, but 3,700 yards, 20 TDs, 12 touchdowns. I think that when you look at Caleb Williams, I think he'll surpass those numbers relatively easily. And he should be a 4,000-yard passer with all that he has around him, right? I think we are headed, we are on a collision course for talking about him having the best rookie season for any number one overall quarterback really in the history of the game.
Yeah, and there's one more. Cam Newton's was incredible as well. So that one, another one that'll be tough to top. But I think he can be in that range of having an argument as the best rookie season for a number one overall pick. And not only because of his talent, but the way that this front office has completely attacked surrounding him with weapons. They go out and get Keenan Allen. They draft Roma Dunze in the first round. They bring in Gerald Everett to kind of round out their tight end room with him and Cole Kmet. They bring in DeAndre Swift, who's a pretty quarterback-friendly running back, to pair him with Khalil Herbert and Roschon Johnson. So they have a really solid stable of running backs. They've invested in the offensive line over the past couple of years. The only thing to me, and I don't even know if it's really a hindrance, maybe it's just a personal preference, I'm not a huge fan of Shane Waldron at all.
Okay.
I do not think that he is a great offensive coordinator by any means.
All right.
You look at last year with what he had, it's a very similar build. I mean, you look at the three receivers in Chicago, you flip it on the other side to Seattle, which is where Shane Waldron came from, and he had DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and a rookie Jackson Smith and Jigba, a very formidable wide receiver trio, and a really good running back stable with Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet in his rookie year. And that offense didn't really meet expectations. And yes, I know Caleb Williams is much more talented than Geno Smith. Geno's kind of had this, you know, career revival towards the back end of his career, which was highly credited to the now Carolina Panthers head coach and Dave Canales. But at the same time, that offense should have been way more high powered.
Right.
Last
I agree.
Year. Yeah. I mean, I think it was during the Super Bowl, during the Super Bowl, and someone was interviewing JSN and asking him about Shane Waldron and what the Bears were getting in him. And I think all he did was say, "Are we live right now?" And the reporter was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Good luck." And that was it. He very poorly utilized a very talented receiver in JSN, and I just hope that doesn't become the case in Chicago, that he is able to utilize the different weapons that he has, because you have every level of it. You have Roma Dunze, who is a great down-the-field, contested catch, 50-50 ball kind of receiver, bigger bodied. You have Keenan Allen, who is a master route runner and is, like I said, very quarterback-friendly, had one of the best open scores in the NFL last year. And then DJ Moore, who's just a really versatile receiver. He's a guy that can take a slant 80 yards and score. He's a guy that can be a deep threat. He can really do it all, and is a very well-rounded receiver. So he has every aspect to be successful. He's the only thing that gives me pause on the Chicago Bears offense. Outside of Caleb Williams making rookie mistakes, holding on to the ball too long, that's no big deal to me. It's just the scheme. I'm a little bit worried.
Well,
about
let me push back at least a little bit. Shane Waldron, okay, before Russell Wilson left, Russell Wilson played 14 games in 2021, and I know that the Seahawks did not have a great year that year. I think they were 6-8 in the games that Russell Wilson played. 25 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. He threw for 3,100 yards in 14 games. One of his best passing, you know, stints of his career before he ended up getting out of Seattle. And then also, can we forget about 2022? I know 2023 was not smooth for the Seahawks, but 2022, Geno Smith was a Pro Bowler, and he was phenomenal. He was very, very good with Shane Waldron. So I like, yeah, there's been some low points for Shane Waldron, but I also think that there has been some moments where you look at him and you're like, he really does have a good downfield passing game. He can exploit the intermediate passing game. It feels like it could be pretty solid when you have the amount of talent he has on that offense. Now, obviously, there are better names in the NFL. I'm not going to act like Shane Waldron's like the best offensive coordinator or even a top 10 offensive coordinator. But at the same time, I think there's been some high points that you're sort of leaving out.
Yeah, I don't think he's terrible. I'm not saying he's like a bottom five offense coordinator in the league or anything. I think he's just shown that he can mismanage talent at times. Like I said, Jackson Smith and Jigba is a great example. He's not a tight end guy at all, like has never really been one to utilize tight ends, which take it or leave it. That's not a huge thing to me, but if you've got Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett, I think they can be utilized to help your offense and get people more open. Like I said, it's not a lot of concern. I'm not going to be the one to say Caleb Williams is going to be held back by Shane Waldron, but I just don't know if Shane Waldron is the one to get the best out of Caleb Williams.
I think more so than anything, it's just the staff. Like, I'm not a mad Eberflus guy. I'm not a full believer in that guy by any stretch of the imagination. I just think that staff has been held on too long by the Bears.
Yes,
even more so than Shane Waldron. I think that there are other avenues they could have gone down. I thought Matt Eberflus probably should have gotten let go after last year, hire a new guy going into this new regime with Caleb Williams. I feel like Ryan Poles, that's been his one misstep. I think he's been a good GM for the most part, but I think he should have probably moved on heading into the Caleb Williams era.
Yeah, I really think the only thing that can make me more excited for this offense and really like make one of those hot takes, bold predictions, and sit the stake down and say, okay, Caleb Williams is going to have the greatest rookie season for a number one overall pick ever, would be if they, like you said, if they would have moved on from Matt Eberflus, which they should have. I mean, all the writing was on the wall that's not working out. And they brought in somebody, you know, exciting. If they had brought in one of these offensive minds that recently got
Bobby
hired.
Bobby Slowick, Ben Johnson.
Yeah, Ben Johnson, Dave Canales, who was hired by the Panthers. There's one more that I was just thinking of. Oh, Callahan with the Titans.
Yep.
He excites me, coming from the Bengals system. There's a lot of Zach Robinson, who is the Atlanta Falcons offensive coordinator now, coming over from L.A. Like, there were a lot more exciting offensive-minded coaches that they could have went towards. But overall, it doesn't scare me too much, because I think it's really hard to mess up that much talent, not only at the quarterback position, but just all over the field.
Yep. Talking with Christian Fowler at C Fowler BCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We have to talk a little bit of Memphis football. We're 2 weeks or so into training camp. They've had a scrimmage. You're going to have another scrimmage coming up on Saturday. What I did yesterday in your absence on the podcast is I ranked my top three key players that could shift this team into being a college football playoff caliber team. So obviously with that, there's some givens. Some people could say Seth Hennigan's a given, the running back room's a given, Rock Taylor, Demir Blankensee, they're a given, so you wouldn't put them in that top three. But the way I ranked it, put Seth Hennigan at number three. Number two, I went Elijah Herrigan. Number one, I ended up going Kobe Miner. Now, you could go just about anybody in that secondary as a guy who could really shift this defense and the secondary into overdrive and potentially make them a top half defense in the American Athletic Conference. But I picked Kobe Miner because I feel like you finally have a guy at about 6'1", 190 who can actually sort of press up, play some man into the boundary. And I don't know if they've had that guy in a long, long time. They really haven't had that guy since Bobby McCain in 2014, where you were comfortable putting him on an island and letting him go compete.
Yeah, and 1 year of P.J. Carter. Can't forget that freshman season.
Oh, yeah, no, that was a good freshman season, true.
Yeah. You kind of surprised me with that, because as you were asking that, I was thinking, and my mind shifted immediately to Elijah Herring, and I was like, oh, this is not one that Gabe's going to pick. So you kind of stole my thunder on that one, because I was definitely going to throw Elijah Herring in that top three, because I think he is immensely important. If you have him and Chandler Martin playing next to each other, at as high of a level as they both can, then it's extremely scary what that linebacker duo can be. So Elijah Herring's definitely one of them. Kobe Miner is a great pick as well, just because, like you said, they need an anchor in this secondary. Even if there are, you know, a little bit of holes, whether it's at the nickel or whether one of the safety spots, if they do have a weaker link of the group, at least they have that anchor. And I'm with you in the fact that I think he can be that guy and has proven at an even higher level than this that he can be a really solid player. So I think those are two really good ones. And I'm also I'm gonna deviate away from quarterback because I feel like that's obvious. I mean, we know
right. If
Seth doesn't play well, the team's not gonna be that great.
Yeah.
So of course that he's number one by far and away. I don't think you can really make an argument against it. But if we're getting more creative here, I'll go Mario Anderson as well. And I know we immediately want to go to the passing game and Seth Hennigan and Rock Taylor and Demir. But this running back room has the ability to be really special in the AAC. And we've talked so much about defense and secondary and helping them out. How can they be better? Well, if there are games, let's say they're playing against a very good offense, and we know Memphis wants to be high-powered offensively as well, but if they have games where they want to keep an offense off the field, Mario Anderson
yep.
is capable of doing that, and that helps out your defense tremendously. Yes, scoring fast is awesome. Making big plays in the passing game looks great, but at times you're not doing your defense any favors if you're getting off the field in 20 seconds. But if you can have these long, sustained drives where you lean on the running game and the short to intermediate passing game, and you're just moving the ball and grinding them out, that's going to win you games. There are games this year, a game or two this year, where that could win them a game that they would have lost otherwise. And when I think of that, my mind immediately goes to either 2018 or 2019 Houston game that was in Memphis. Those were two really, really good teams. And Memphis just ran all over them.
Yep.
They controlled the clock. They used all their running back room.
Threw JoJo Dorsey us in there. Just had those big sets, one wide receiver on the field at any given time.
Yep. They got in the I formation, and they just controlled the game and ran the ball right down Houston's throat. I think it was like 45-27 or something like
yep.
that by the end of the game. And the entire second half was Memphis lining it up and being able to say, stop it.
Yep.
And they haven't been able to. They haven't had a team that could do that since then, where they could just line up and hand the ball off, churn out yardage, burn clock, and keep the opposing offense off the field. And I think with Mario Anderson and Sutton Smith and the potential of a lot of these transfer offensive linemen and returning
yep.
offensive linemen, I think they could have the ability to do that this year, and that helps more than most people realize when you have a team that can control the game, control the clock, and wear out a defense.
Yeah. Now, one of the things about that 2018 team that you're talking about, when they beat Houston and they had JoJo Dorsey in for the entire second half, they were basically running G lead the entire second half. Didn't really didn't throw a ball in the air, just absolutely pounded Houston into the ground. The one thing, you do have to look at that offensive line. I know you mentioned some of those transfer offensive linemen and the potential they have. That offensive line finished top three in the Joe Moore Award for the best offensive line in the country.
I want
to see if this line can do something similar. Those are you know, high bars to reach, but that 2018 offensive line was unreal. And there was a lot of guys
yeah.
held over. You had Trayvon Tate, Drew Kaiser, Dustin Woodard, Roger Joseph. You had all those guys still left over from my final year in 2017.
Yeah. I mean, it obviously helps have returning starters and bringing guys back and having that continuity. But I do think this offensive line can be really good. Can it be a top three, you know, Joe Moore Award finalist?
Probably not.
But can they be a top two or three offensive line in the American? Absolutely. Can they be the best offensive line in the American? I'm not going to count it out because you have a lot of guys that have proven that they can play at a high level. So, yes, they might not have the offensive line that they had in 2018, but I just feel like if you're – because you don't have to do that all the time, right? You don't have to be able to do that every single game. But in those big games, in those big moments, if you can lean on those guys, it helps so much. And you
yep.
would like to think by that point in the year when you're really getting into the meat of your schedule, if you're on that run where you're undefeated or you have a one-loss team, with that loss being to Florida State and you're starting to get into stiffer competition, you would like to think that the offensive line is far, far along enough and that the running back room is far along enough to where if you needed to, you could rely on the run game to kind of get you out of one.
Mm-hmm. Now, final thing, AP Top 25 preseason poll came out yesterday. It's Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, Notre Dame, Penn State at 8, Michigan at 9, Florida State at 10. That Florida State versus Memphis game is going to be pretty massive. Top of the ACC, top of the AAC. Can't wait for that game. But I want to focus here at number 6. Ole Miss, first time they have been ranked this high since Archie Manning was on campus. That's a wild stat that the I saw the AP Top 25 put out yesterday. This Ole Miss team really has some juice about them. And I think defensively is where people are paying attention to. The offense is given with Jackson Dart, Ulysses Bentley, Juice Wells, Trey Harris, all those types of guys. But that defense has some juice now. You got the transfer from Florida as a defensive end, had 9 sacks last year. Walter Nolan there on the inside. They finally have the big SEC bodies that I think can go with the high-powered offense that Lane Kiffin puts out every year.
Yeah, it's always – it feels like ever since Ole Miss has become more and more relevant in the SEC, so was that probably over the last 8 to 10 years, ever since Hugh Freeze was there. It's always been a tale of two different systems. You know, offense has been really high-powered, and the defense has been below average for the most part. And I think with this team, with what they've brought in, specifically, I mean, you mentioned those two defensive line transfers. Walter Nolan was, you know, a former 5-star. And
Don't even try.
Amanda Malian Florida is a really, really good defensive end. So they have some of these guys that can control the game, and they, you know, they're bringing back pieces as well. The only thing that just truly hurts for them is losing Quinshon Judkins.
Yes.
It hurts so bad. And I know they're still good at running back. You mentioned Ulysses Bentley. A lot of Memphis fans will be familiar with him playing at SMU for some time. But the juice that Quinshon Judkins has is ridiculous. I mean, he's arguably the best running back in all of college football. And to lose him with this season, you know, being potentially a national championship type of season for Ole Miss, it hurts. But at the same time, they have so much offensive talent, and the defense is starting to catch up to that. And they really do. They have an ability this year. They have the talent this year to do something really special. I mean, you look at that team on paper, and you really can't poke holes anywhere. And I wouldn't be mad if they were ranked higher, honestly, because I think Texas is kind of fraud.
I think they're overvalued. I mentioned that yesterday.
Did you? Yeah, because they lost so much. And I know a lot of people look at, well, Quinn Ewers is coming back. You're not looking at the full – I mean, they lost Xavier Worthy, Adonai Mitchell,
Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy.
Yeah, Jatavion Sanders. They basically lost every bit of their offensive weaponry. And I know they brought in Isaiah Bond from Alabama. They brought in a lot of talented players. But I don't see Texas being any better this year on paper than they were last year. And they have a much tougher schedule this year than they've ever had. So
yep.
I think you could easily make an argument that Ole Miss should be ranked over Texas.
Yeah, but we'll see how it all plays out. I'm with you on Texas, just because I think there are a lot of programs that have been able to replenish that type of talent getting drafted or leaving for the NFL. I think Michigan has done it. Georgia certainly has done it. Alabama has done it. Texas has not been a team that's been able to do that, not been a program that's been able to do that. Even though they are replacing a lot of guys with, 4 and 5 stars, they have still tended to slip up. And last year was sort of the big year where you're saying Texas is back. We really trust that Texas is back, but can you do it again? That's always the test for teams like that are thought this highly, that are top 5 in the preseason AP poll. And we always have somebody in the top 10. I mean, I think the last 20 or so years that goes from the top 10 to unranked by the end of the year, I'm not saying Texas will be that team, but we have to keep an eye out on that. I think there's no question about it. But I'll say this, Christian, I appreciate you hopping on. We'll do this again next Tuesday.
Yes, sir. See you next week.
Yes, sir. That's Christian Fowler at C. Fowler BCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast, releases every single Tuesday at noon. Make sure you check it out. Audio is on Spotify and on Apple. Full-length video version is on Bluff City Media's YouTube channel. Now, we need to go ahead and grab a break and hop into the Blitz. Coming up next, we have a few stories to discuss right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9
FM. The biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
And always remember that the Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. Connor, what do we have today?
We will get more NBA schedule news coming up later this week. But one thing that we do have is the Grizzlies group play draw. They're going to be playing the Golden State Warriors Friday, November 15th, my birthday, at 9 p.m. CT. Then on November 19th, they have the Denver Nuggets at 7. And then on the 29th, they have the Pelicans at 4 p.m. CT. And then on December 3rd, 7:30 CT, the Dallas Mavericks.
So they're going on the road against the Warriors and the Mavericks. That's brutal. You get the Nuggets and the Pels at home. But it is kind of funny to me, after last year, all the injuries they had, they go 0-4 in the NBA Cup.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The Gel Flex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the Gel Flex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
And they had the Blazers and the Jazz in their particular group play, and now they get the hardest by far. It's not even close, by the way.
No, this is the
hardest group. This is the death group.
Yeah.
In the West. And I don't know. If you ask me right now, I'm just going to say baseline 2-2. If they go 3-1 and somehow get a wild card and move on in the NBA Cup, I think that will be the upset, and we'll have to see sort of the tiebreakers there. But this is as brutal as it gets. Coming off of last year, the first year of the NBA Cup, where they just absolutely struggled in an easy group, they get the hardest group in the world. Now, I do think they match up relatively well with just about every team. I do want to see, you know, the Nuggets and how Zach Edey may be able to, you know, can he bother Nikola Jokic where no one else can? Probably not. But I do want to see that. That's going to be a massive game for me relatively early in the season. But I think they match up well with the Warriors. I think they match up well with the Pelicans. And I know that the Mavericks got a whole lot better, but I still think they match up relatively well with the Mavericks. They have more scoring ability. They have more creation on the offensive end. I think their bench is a little bit deeper than it has been in the past. So I still think that they could win a couple of games in this group, but this group is just so ridiculous. I remember watching it when it was announced, just like, damn, they can't catch any breaks, even though seemingly they're going to be healthy this year. They're going to have all of their able bodies, and they're not going to have a suspension they're dealing with Ja Morant. But this early season slate, now that we look at it with the in-season tournament, it could be really brutal. They may have to come out in the first couple of months of the season and just sort of hang on for dear life, because they are going to get a tough draw.
No, this is a tough draw for sure, but one of the reasons this group is so, you know, quote unquote death group is because of the Grizzlies, though. Like, if you're the New Orleans Pelicans, you're like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, because all, you know, of these four teams, I think you can make the argument that the Grizzlies might be the most talented team or the second most talented team in this group. It really depends on what you think of the Denver Nuggets after last season and the offseason that they have had, and where you place the Dallas Mavericks after they made an NBA Finals run. I would actually say that the Mavericks have, I think, a say for first place. And then you're kind of talking about the Grizzlies and the Nuggets being,
well, I think these are all second. Top eight seeds.
No, that's
in the Western Conference.
There's a very good chance that we look up and every single one of these teams is in the playoffs next
year. Yes, yes. I think because of the process of elimination, I think somebody is going to be in the play-in and may get knocked out.
Pelicans.
I would look at the Pelicans.
Yeah.
But like when you, and maybe the Warriors. I'm not a huge firm believer in the Warriors.
You know what? You may be right.
I mean, we're talking about Buddy Hield replacing Klay Thompson.
Right.
That's going to be very interesting to watch.
Yeah.
But I still think every single one of these teams could be a top eight seed because the Pelicans got a whole lot better with DeJounte Murray as sort of their lead guard. We'll see what happens, you know, with C.J. McCollum and sort of his role now that DeJounte Murray is there. The Warriors still have a chance to be a solid team. Steph Curry and Draymond Green can make certain of that. I hope what Steve Kerr does for that team. Well, I guess I don't hope it because I don't want them to be all that good. But I hope, I mean, if I was a Warriors fan, I would hope that Jonathan Kuminga gets involved a whole lot more. And did you see recently what they're talking about offering him? $224 million max extension. So there is that. But all of these teams are so damn capable of making noise come playoff time. And I think the Grizzlies certainly fit in that group. I think you could, you know, even outside of just being in the top eight, you could have three of these five teams in the top six in a protected seat.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, that is, yeah, because the Nuggets, the Grizzlies, and the Mavericks,
yes,
I think all three of those teams expect to be in the top six of the West. Like, I think that that is the expectation from the fan base and from the organizations for next year. We've said a few times that we think that the landing spot for the Grizzlies will be anywhere between three and five.
Yep.
This is a brutal, brutal group play. I do think, though, the Grizzlies have a pretty good shot at getting out of it. It's just, it's going to really depend on what happens on the road. I think that they might be able to get the Nuggets and Pelicans at home. I think that Golden State on the road is going to be more difficult than we may expect, especially with that 9 p.m. start. And then Dallas on the road is going to be a war.
And Dallas and the Grizzlies,
that's going to be a fun matchup.
Here's what also stinks, and this is why I say the first part of their schedule, the first couple months, may be brutal, because when you look in division, there's no gimmies anymore in division. Like, the Spurs are not a gimme anymore. You have Chris Paul and Harrison Barnes alongside Victor Wembanyama. That's not going to be easy. The Rockets have gotten themselves better the last couple of years. That's a tough game. And the Rockets finished ahead of them in the standings last year. They were a 500 team at 41-41. Then the Pelicans got better, and they were 49-win team last year. And then you have the Mavericks at the top of that division. So I think on top of the in-season tournament, you're going to have to deal with some really tough in-division opponents throughout the first few months of the season. And I just, I hope if the Grizzlies can come out, by the time we get to All-Star break, if the Grizzlies can be in that top five, top six range in the Western Conference, I feel really confident about where they'll be by the time we actually get to the playoffs.
I wonder what the gap is going to be between, you know, 11 and 10. Like, what is that playoff play-in line going to be?
I think we'll take a little step back from last year, right?
It's
like,
not
we have
50.
To. It can't. It
what
can't,
was it? 48 last year.
It was last year. Let's see. I have it right in front of me. Last year, the number 10 team was the Warriors with 46 wins.
46.
The Rockets were at 41 wins.
God.
I think a team like the, if you're 43-40 or whatever, or 42-40, I think that could potentially get you into the play-in this year. I just don't expect it to be as damn, you know, loaded as it was a year ago, because it was ridiculous. Eight seed had 49 wins. Like, that's a ridiculous Western Conference. I think the Western Conference takes a bit of a step back this year.
Let's play it safe, and the Grizzlies win 50 games. Like, let's just do that.
Yeah,
just play it safe. 50.
Get to 50.
Cool 50.
You feel nice being in the top six, you get to 50. Yeah!
Sportico published their NFL team evaluations today, and the Cowboys are the talk of the entire NFL as they became the first sports franchise to exceed $10 billion in evaluation. The number is $10.32 billion, to be exact. But we have no money to pay these guys.
Do people believe me now about complacency? Like, do people get why the Joneses, why Jerry Jones in particular is complacent with this situation?
I mean, this is a wild story.
Why he doesn't seem to care all that much about signing these guys back. Why he has no urgency. Because they are a $10 billion franchise. He knows what he has. But at the same time, yeah, he may know what he has, but you have to go and win. You haven't won a Super Bowl since 1996. You haven't really been all that close since 1996. NFC Championship has evaded you, even though you've had some solid teams. So he still has to sign these guys back. He's got all the money in the world to go do so based on this valuation, but he's got to actually reach into his pocket and write some damn checks. It's that simple. But, Connor, do you get why I've been calling them complacent? Because he sees this. He knows what his franchise is worth. He knows the star is one of the biggest logos in sport, and he knows that he can just sort of sit on his hands because his fans are going to show up and he's still going to make money hand over fist. Every time these valuations get published, every year, he will go up in value. There's a reason he's complacent. I don't like him being complacent, but there's an obvious reason.
Well, that's why yesterday I just said I don't think that Jerry Jones actually cares about winning. I really don't think he cares.
As long as bottom line.
As long as he's a billionaire, well, and he's making all of that money and they're getting that evaluation, it's an ego play for him. It's all about the ego. Well, and at the end of the day, Dak, CD, Micah, they didn't suck up to Jerry Jones, and the Jones is enough, so that's why they haven't been paid. And it's that simple to me now.
I have my take ironed out now that we've gotten to sit on this for a while. I think he wants to win, right? I don't think he's sitting there thinking, oh, we just want to sell hope, and we don't care about winning. We don't think we can do it with this group. I think he wants to win, but he wants to win on his terms. Mm-hmm. He wants to win, and by the time they get to the
right.
You know, when it took so long to pay CeeDee Lamb, when he doesn't extend Dak or he doesn't extend Micah this offseason, he wants to get to the Super Bowl at the end of the year, you know, be hoisting the Lombardi Trophy and him saying, oh, you guys were trashing us in the offseason, but look what I did. Right, I didn't have to pay all these guys to go win a Super Bowl. Look what I did. I think he wants to win on his terms and his terms only. I don't think it's the thought process behind like, oh, I've lost faith in this group altogether. But I think when he wins, he wants it to be about Jerry. Just like everything about that franchise, he wants it to be about Jerry. He wants to be the face of the franchise over any of the players that are on that franchise, whether it's Dak, Micah, or CD. They want people to think of the Cowboys for Jerry Jones and not for any of those players.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I agree with that. It's like I said, it's all about the ego. It's all about his ego and it being wrapped up in the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, I do think he cares about winning, but I think what I'm really trying to say, though, is he cares about winning as long as it is enough winning to justify, you know, making that much money and to keep the fans. It's just, it's stay on that line of being competitive, but am I going to pay to like for the real chance to win the Super Bowl? Maybe, maybe not. It depends on how the players react to me. It depends on if I think I'm going to be the story.
Isn't it kind of funny, though? It's like, you have this much money. You have this valuation in this franchise. Why not pay the guys?
Why not?
Why not?
And that's why we've gotten to a point where
it comes down to ego, but it is still, to me, a why not question. Because if you sign these guys back, I think you can still take credit by the end, Jerry. You know what I mean? If you keep everybody happy on your roster and keep your superstars happy and you end up winning and winning big and getting to an NFC championship and getting into the Super Bowl, you can still take credit for that, brother. You don't have to do this song and dance every offseason with your star players.
It just drives me crazy that literally the most wealthy team in sports, not just the NFL,
in the world,
is pitching a fit over not paying guys what would basically be nothing. Like, they wouldn't even feel it. They wouldn't even feel it.
What's $34 to $35 million a year to a $10.32 billion franchise?
Cents. It's like dropping cents at the gas station.
I don't get it. I don't understand it, but the only thing that makes me understand it is the complacency he has and his ego. Wanting to be the face of the star. Wanting to be the guy out front. Not wanting his franchise players to be the names that are synonymous with the Cowboys. That he wants that name Jerry. He wants Jerry to be synonymous with the Cowboys. But this is something we're going to continue to watch. I think we may get a little closer here in the coming days, but it's already taken too long.
I feel like we've been told that every day for the last 2 weeks. And then he'll open his mouth every 4 days.
Yes.
And
it gets pushed off. Say something stupid.
And it gets pushed off a little bit further.
Say something stupid because he can't help himself. He can't help himself when he gets in front of a mic. But, hey, it is what it is. Cowboys fans are still going to show up game one, and they're still going to go up in valuation by the time we have this conversation next year. Even if they bow out early in the playoffs, even if, you know, they barely get a wild card spot, then bow out in the playoffs, people will still support this team and this valuation will continue to go up. But that will do it for the Blitz. We have one more segment left of the day. We'll come back and rewind right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.